You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again, and as always, I am your host, Mallory Ortberg, also known as Dear Prudence, with us in the studio today. I am very excited to have the roommate of a former guest, Eliel Cruz. We're going to get to him in just a minute. But first, I recently answered a question in the column that seemed so important to me that I thought I should also take to the podcast and send out a general reminder to my listeners. And that reminder is this. You probably shouldn't steal other people's pets. I'm not going to go so far as to say I will never give any of you permission to steal a pet, because life is a rich tapestry, and every once in a while, something really bananas might come down the pike, and you might be in a situation where stealing a pet is the only right choice in front of you. But I'm going to go ahead and say that 9 times out of 10, it is not the right choice. I had a letter writer this week who wanted to know if they could steal their neighbor's cat because their neighbor lets their cat go outdoors. That's it. Not that the cat was neglected or abandoned or fending for itself or didn't have a collar or a chip, just that it was an outdoor cat. And they believe that all cats should be indoors. And that's fine. There are good reasons to want to keep a cat indoors. There are good reasons to let a cat go outdoors. But something that's important to remember is that having an outdoor cat is not illegal. If you were to call up animal control and say, my neighbor lets their cat go outside, animal control would not say, we will drop everything and be right over and remove this cat from the home. And therefore, it is not grounds for stealing. If you want a cat that you would like to keep indoors, you can go to an animal shelter and say, please give me a cat. I would like to keep it inside. And they will be more than happy to accommodate you. In the absence of that, you do not have my permission to steal other people's cats willy-nilly just so you can put them in your living room. So on that note, I'd like to welcome our guest, Eliel Cruz, who is an LGBT activist focusing on bisexuality and faith. Eliel, welcome. Do you have any opinions about cat stealing?
You know what? I wouldn't personally steal cats because I'm deathly allergic to them. But mm-hmm. I sometimes forget that when I go over friends' houses because I don't see cats very often, and then I'll pet them and then my eyes will break out and all this awful stuff. But before I forget that I'm allergic, I would steal them until afterwards. And then, yeah, but no.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I keep my home stocked with like 4 different kinds of allergy medicine because I have a cat and many of my friends are allergic, and I will often like meet them at the doorway and like prophylactically shove an allergy pill at them.
Yeah, it's a miserable experience, unfortunately, but they're so pretty and so cute. I wish I wasn't allergic, but that's the cards I've been dealt.
Well, speaking of the cards that you've been dealt, we have been dealt a beautiful array of letters this week. Do you like that segue? I thought it was clunky.
It was it was good. No, it was good. We're going to work with it. We're going to roll. It's going to happen.
But I pulled it off with confidence. Mm-hmm. Our first letter, we are just diving right in because mm-hmm. this one is a lot. It's got some of the things that come up a lot in this letter or in this column, which is somebody interrupting somebody else's sleep, which if you've ever listened to an episode of the show, you know how I feel about that. And I'm really excited for us to tackle this one. So I'm going to go ahead and read this first letter for us. The subject of this is son in bed, sweet or creepy. Here we go. Dear Prudence, for the past 2 years, my husband has been sleeping in our 7-year-old son's bedroom because I can't stand his snoring, and he becomes violent and abusive if I have to wake him up to roll over. I'm the breadwinner in the family, and my husband refuses to see his doctor about his snoring, so if someone needs good sleep, shouldn't it be me? Over the last few months, our son got sick a couple of times and asked to sleep with me, and I let him. Now he's starting the night in his bed, but moving to my bed in the middle of the night. I suspect part of this is that he's not sleeping and he's being woken up by his father snoring, but another part of it is also just wanting to snuggle with mommy. I say it's sweet, and I'll take my little boy snuggles as long as I can because I don't think this phase will last long, even if my husband stops snoring tonight. My husband says it's weird and creepy and implies there's something sexual to it. What say you, dear Prudence? For what it's worth, we did co-sleep with both of our kids when they were babies, but they've both been in their own beds for years, except sometimes when they get sick. Well, this has escalated.
This is a lot. This is like an Easter egg for red flags for me. There's so much going on here that I don't know where to start.
Yeah. I think I have an idea of where to start, which is like, it's a pretty big deal to imply to your partner, I think there's something sexual about the way you sleep with our kid.
Yeah.
I've never heard the word little boy snuggles before. It didn't make me comfortable. I hope I don't hear it again. But I do not believe that this parent is sexually interested in their child. I don't believe that this is in any way like sexually manipulative behavior. I think that's a really inappropriate charge for the husband to be levying at the letter writer.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is mommy talk, right? I mean, I don't have kids, but I know that I have, you know, mothers and aunts and grandmothers who would say little boy snuggles to, you know, myself when I was young and my cousins and things. But this, you know, the kid was 2 years they've been sleeping in his room. That's 5 to 7 years old. That's a child still. Mm-hmm. And that's a really weird thing for the husband to sexualize the boy coming to the mother's bed, which is in order to get better sleep, perhaps, or when they're feeling sick and they want some mommy time. I don't think that's bad, and it's really weird,
right,
to do. But I specifically think it's really weird that we kind of like roll over that when she says that when she woke him up because of his snoring, that he became violent and abusive. Like that,
right? Because that suggests more than just like, oh, I'm awake all of a sudden and I kind of like lash out for a second. That suggests he's like,
yeah, like that,
flipping out. That
was
ongoing.
That was a red flag for me. I was just like, what extent is he becoming violent and abusive for being woken up in bed? Because that's kind of nerve-wracking for me. But I mean, I know I used to snore so much, and then I got my tonsils removed because they were so large they were blocking my thing and out by blocking my airway, and I could sleep good. So I think, I mean. And the fact that he's refusing to see a doctor to even try to remedy the situation, he's the start of the issue, and he's not trying to meet anyone halfway. I don't know. This is
right, because his solution is not even like, I'm going to go sleep on the couch. It's literally just, we'll all go snore in our kids' room so they can't sleep, and they're not like big enough to push me and roll me over, so no one can. Do you know what I mean? Like he's causing the problem and doing pretty much nothing to address it, which is not okay. Like, clearly it's bothering the child. The child's leaving his bed in the middle of the night because he can't sleep when his dad snores either. And this guy needs to, like, get his ass to a doctor.
Yeah, definitely.
Or at the very least, sleep on the damn couch.
Yeah, and I mean, even for himself, too. I'm most people who are snoring are dealing with sleep apnea or some type of medical condition that keeps them from getting good sleep. And perhaps that's why he gets really aggressive when he gets woken up, because he wants his sleep. So even
right.
going to the doctor.
Yeah, this is not behavior that shows up during the day as well.
Yeah, that's kind of that was a red flag for me. That language was a little worrisome. But yeah, I mean, for himself, for his kids, for his wife, go to the doctor, you know, get help that you need to try to find some remedies to stop your snoring. Don't sexualize your little boy.
right.
And yeah, let's let the entire family sleep and relax.
yeah. So letter writer, definitely hold your ground. You are not doing anything that's sexually inappropriate, and it's actually really okay for you to say to your husband, like, you need to take that off the table. Like, that's clearly not what's going on here. And like, that you're saying that suggests that, like, you don't trust me. And it's a very cruel thing to say when there's nothing to suggest that that's actually what's going on. And to say, like, you need to go to the doctor. At the very least, if you're not going to go to the doctor, it's clearly not working for you to go sleep in our kid's room anymore, because you're waking him up every night. So you need to go sleep in a part of the house where nobody can hear you. Or a better solution to that is go see a damn doctor. Like, there's stuff, you know, snoring is not incurable. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that we can do for it. And it's just amazing to me that this is a person who would rather, like, wake up everybody else in the house and cause a lot of, like, sleep drama.
Oh, yeah, it's so
and lob accusations of, like, sexual predation at their spouse rather than just go to a doctor and get a CPAP machine or something. I'm not a huge fan of this husband. I'm not thrilled about it. And I can understand why this letter writer is spending more time, like, being with her kids than she is with her partner, because he sounds like a sleep-deprived jerk.
Yeah, he's grumpy. He needs some sleep, and so does the rest of the family.
Yeah, absolutely. In the meantime, do we have any suggestions for, like, do you think that the letter writer needs to stop letting the kid come in the bedroom, other than just saying to the husband, like, you can't go sleep in his room anymore? Like, should there be any new rules, or is it just he needs to not worry about it?
To deprive the kid from that kind of, like, solace and, like, security of being with his mother when he's sick, or maybe he's afraid, or he just wants some good sleep. I think, you know, kind of gives the kid the bad end of the stick. This is definitely something the letter writer should engage her husband directly in whatever space she feels comfortable enough to, and hopefully during the day, after he's gotten some sleep, as well as she's gotten some sleep, and just try to find, a remedy. Relationships are all about a compromise, and trying to find ways that we can work together to be okay with the things that life throws our way. So this, so they have snoring issues. Let's find some different remedies that many other couples have found in order to move on.
Right on. Well, will you, on that note, please take us away and read the next letter?
Absolutely. So the subject is, my friend scammed me for years, and now everyone thinks I'm a jerk for calling her out. Dear Prudence, 2 years ago, I found myself in desperate need of an apartment in a city I couldn't afford. Luckily, a good friend who lived there offered me her spare bedroom. We agreed to buy our own food and split rent and bills 50-50, but as it had already been her apartment, I wasn't to change anything outside my bedroom, which I didn't mind. I recently let the landlord in for an emergency while she was away and learned that we are not, in fact, splitting the rent. I pay her $1,000 in cash on top of half of the utilities, and she writes a $1,200 check for their landlord. When I confronted her, she told me she could charge whatever she wants for her room in her apartment and reminded me I wasn't on the lease, and threatened to kick me out. I packed my things over the weekend and left to live somewhere else. My former friend is livid and has threatened to sue me because it turns out she can't afford rent now. She bought a new car and opened a credit card after I moved in. She can't actually sue me, but she has been rallying our friends around her, many of whom she feels was right, or even if she was wrong, that I'm somehow worse for abandoning my responsibilities. I, however, think my friend paid $200 for rent and lived large for 2 years under the guise of doing me a favor, which she reminded me of quite frequently. Am I the asshole here?
Do you think the letter writer is the asshole here?
Absolutely not. First of all, I want to know what city she's living in that she only pays $1,200 for a two-bedroom apartment, because I'm living in the wrong city.
clearly.
But I would be so livid. I mean, mixing money with friends is not a good thing. I am so lucky to have an amazing roommate that I love to death and who's also a writer and an activist, and we get along so well. But that's not always the case, as you see with this letter writer. And I have a lot of other friends living in New York City who have been in so many similar situations, where either they've been the one to extend a lot of help and grace in opening their apartment that they have their name on the lease of, or they've been on the receiving end and then been ripped off like this letter writer has been. But I would be super upset if I'm paying way more than over 50. That was the agreement that we had upon, even if it wasn't a written legal document. But we had both as common people, as basic strangers, would hopefully agree with what we have already established, what would be our agreement. But they're friends as well. And for her friend to use her to really live really, really cheap and be able to spend money, opening a credit card, getting a car, and all these other things. That's kind of, douchey. I would be so angry. I don't think she's an asshole.
No, and it was so unnecessary. Like, I was reading this and I was like, this is full on like Ananias and Sapphira status, which is a New Testament deep cut for all of you listeners out there.
Yeah.
But like, some people, look both to, fill a room and also turn a profit, and it would have been one thing if her friend had said, the amount I am charging for this room is $1,000. But the friend didn't say that. The friend said, you and I will split the rent 50-50.
Yeah. She lied.
And that's a lie. And then it's a total unnecessary lie. You know, it was also clear, like, it's never a great situation to be living somewhere without a lease and to be paying, like, under the table. But, you know, sometimes people are in situations where that's all they can swing. So I understand that the letter writer was, like, in a really difficult situation. But, yeah, your friend lied. Your friend lied totally unnecessarily. Your friend was also apparently in the habit of saying things like, you're so lucky I let you live here. All the while, you know, paying like way less than you were paying, and keeping that from you. Yeah, your friend did a jerk thing. You are right that she cannot sue you. If a part of you is at all afraid that she will try to bring some form of like frivolous legal action against you, I would definitely recommend like calling your local tenants' rights board and just finding out like what you need to protect yourself. Again, not that I think she's got anything to come after you with, but just to have like a boilerplate response or, you know, just some additional information so you know the like legal reasons that she cannot sue you.
I mean, she was there for 2 years as well. It wasn't that she was there for just a couple months. 2 years of paying way over the amount of...
That's $24,000.
Yeah.
Like...
Oh, look at you do math like that. I don't do algebra like that. Nope.
I mean, I'm sure I missed something. I was just thinking 24 months, $1,000 a month.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, no, I left that in high school. But, and not only, okay, so not only did she lie, when she was confronted about it and said, hey, and was told, hey, you're lying and this isn't cool. I'm assuming that she left because they weren't able, you know, she said she could charge whatever she wanted for the room. So, she left. And now she's, like, trying to turn all her friends against her. Now, that speaks so much to her character, both to lie to a quote-unquote friend, and then to try to turn all these people against her. You know, I mean, living in a big city, I know it's super hard to have a good group of friends. And that kind of drama can kind of create a lot of stress in your life, especially when she is, you know, she moved out. Who knows if she has a stable place yet? Her friends are kind of, you know, ditching her or throwing her a lot of shade for you know, leaving the other person. I don't know. This person doesn't seem to be a good, like, doesn't have good ethics.
She has not made kind or friendly choices.
No.
And it's kind of amazing that she's trying to hit the letter writer from both angles, right? Which is the first one is like, oh, I've been doing you a favor. And then once you move out, oh, you're abandoning your responsibilities to me. Well, which one is it? Like, are you doing her a favor or is she doing you a favor? Like, you cannot have it both ways. And just again, like, you confronted her about the fact that she lied and her response was, well, you weren't on the lease and I'm going to kick you out, which is actually not addressing the fact that she lied at all. And I'm really sorry that a lot of your friends are taking her side. You know, I hope that you can at the very least clarify to them, like, here's the situation. It's not that I don't think she has like a legal right to charge, you know, market rate for a room in her apartment. What I object to is the fact that for 2 years, she told me we're splitting everything 50-50. And then I found out that she lied. And then when I tried to talk to her about it, she said she was going to kick me out of the house. I can't live with someone like that. She took advantage of me. It was painful and I need to find someplace else to live. And you have not like destroyed her. She can find another roommate if she has to. You are not responsible for the fact that she hasn't been managing her money well. And if people try to make it sound like you put her in a really bad situation, don't let them put that on you. That's bullshit.
Especially when the letter writer has to take care of herself, right? I want my home to be my sanctuary. I want to feel safe. I want my roommates, whoever I'm living with, to be people that I get along with. Well enough that I can, you know, come home and feel comfortable in my home at all times. This is no longer a comfortable place to live. She has written the lies have marred their relationship. Her threatening to kick her out can be really stressful if you're kicked out, when you don't have your name on the lease and you have to find somewhere last minute. That's also could cost a lot of money, especially if you're living in a big city. I wouldn't feel bad. I would prioritize her, herself and her needs, and get to a place where she can, live and feel comfortable and safe.
For sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, this next one, I almost answered in the live chat the other day, and then I thought I was really going to look forward to sort of taking the time to really just like sit with it and, you know, unpack that suitcase and go through all the stuff that's in it.
I'm excited.
This one's really something. It's amazing. Like, this letter writer feels incredibly strongly,
mm-hmm.
But in a way that they would like to sound more casual than they are. And I always find that type of letter really fascinating.
Yeah.
Anything where it feels like the underlying message is, it's the principle of the thing. It is not the principle of the thing. It's never been the principle of the thing. Nothing in the history of time has ever been about the principle of the thing. It's always about the thing. So with that initial prelude, the subject line of this is not using they as a gender-neutral pronoun. Dear Prudence, I am not transphobic, but I am phobic about using a noun that does not match the verb. In other words, I am not going to refer to an individual as they. In fact, I am probably going to winch when someone else does it, which means that there are many trans folk and or their partners with whom I am not going to be able to hang out for fear of seeming disrespectful. While I don't think this is a crushing blow to anyone, I know from speaking to others that I'm not the only one with this issue. Using a verb that doesn't match the noun makes us feel as if we are coming off not as accepting, but ignorant. Our language is imperfect. We are well known for inventing words to meet the circumstances. I wish you would use your platform to reach out to trans folk who might be interested in advancing a third gender-neutral pronoun. And then, since you write about trans issues quite a bit, I wish you would then model that pronoun for us. I realize that it is not my place to choose what someone else wants to be called, but I also realize that if there is not an option with which I and so many others who wish to be allies are comfortable, then we will just avoid awkward situations. Well, I want to throw one thing out there, which is just this beautiful immediate disavowal mm-hmm. of the request that has been made, which is, I wish you would invent and model a pronoun that other people would use.
Mm-hmm.
I realize I shouldn't ask that, and I can't ask anyone else to do that because of me, but that's my request. Which is sort of beautiful. Like, I don't believe I have the right to ask for the thing I'm asking for. Just wanted to say that.
I'm looking for the question in this. there's a lot. There's a. This is how I am. This is who I'm going to be, regardless of what you may not say to me. But I want you to do this so that people can be on my same page as me. Because I don't even know if this person's looking for advice. It's they seem clearly set in where they want to be.
So there's a couple of things about this letter that are really amazing to me, one of which is incredibly petty, and I'm just going to throw that out there right now, which is, and I left this in the letter, they said, I am probably going to winch when someone else does it. What the letter writer meant to write was, I'm probably going to wince. A winch is a spool that you can use to tighten or loosen lengths of rope. And I don't believe they meant I'm going to turn into a spool that tightens and lengthens, you know, amounts of rope. So, you know, and again, this kind of like this amazing sense of, I know language is imperfect and we invent words to meet the circumstances, but this imperfect, somewhat invented word, I don't like it. And I believe that it sounds ignorant and not accepting, and therefore I need another one, which is, again, just this really amazing sort of set of contradictions. It's also worth mentioning there are gender-neutral pronouns that many trans people have advanced and discussed for the last 30 years at least. There's G, which is, you know, there are alternate pronunciations, but like Z-I-E, X-I-E, many gender-neutral, gender-queer, gender-fluid people use those pronouns. And if you were to Google singular gender-neutral pronoun, you would learn about a pretty rich history of said pronouns.
Yeah.
So the thing you are asking for already exists.
I'm also, you know, English isn't my first language, although English quickly took over growing up in the States after being born in Puerto Rico. And as someone who, you know, had to learn English, at a young age, English doesn't make any sense. Like if you're like at least compared to, you know, to Spanish, it could be really difficult to understand why certain words are pronounced certain ways and some aren't. And it doesn't always make, I feel like the letter writer is coming into this as if English, I know they say language is imperfect, but that they're so set in that for this aspect of it, it's not imperfect and it needs to stay the way it is, or at least how they think that it's been. I mean, they has been used as a plural pronoun to refer to individuals who we don't know the gender of, you know, for hundreds of years. And they has been used as a singular pronoun. You know, we have evidence of that at least back to the 1950s. This is not...
Oh, way further. It shows up in Shakespeare. It shows up in Dickens. It shows up in Shaw and Austen. I mean, there is a long history of the singular they, which if you've ever been like at a library and the librarian makes an announcement like, did somebody leave their book here? You've heard someone use the singular they.
Well, absolutely. I think, but I feel that the letter writer is going to quickly try to clap back with, well, that's because we're not, you know, we didn't know the gender of the person. So that's when it's acceptable, is when you're not sure of the gender. But that's not too much of a far reach to then say, well, we do know the gender of the person. They're non-binary. and they fits that gender. So we continue to use that as a singular pronoun as well when we find their gender. But I'm also like really concerned about this quote-unquote allyship that's happening here. They really believe that they're an ally. And it's so funny that I continue, you know, referring to them as they because I don't know their gender. Right? The letter writer gender.
Wait, no, that's kind of what's beautiful is this letter writer has given us no clues.
Like,
and we are using a singular
somebody they. Somebody could keep saying they.
It sounds like kind of part of what you were talking about is they are positioning themselves as, I wish to be an ally.
Like
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, as the ally. So, like, especially right here, they're, like, saying, I'm not transphobic, but that makes me really, right away, you're like, I don't know, that but kind of negates a little bit of what you're going to say. Or, you know, I don't want people to, you know, it's not my place to choose what someone else wants to be called, but. And it's like, well, you kind of do think that you should be, you know, deciding what people or people don't call themselves. You know, language is super important in identifying ourselves and naming ourselves. It's one of the most powerful things that people and marginalized communities can do is to, when we've been disenfranchised and invisible, to be able to use the language that we have, albeit however imperfect, to say, this is who I am, this is my experience, let me share that with you. And it's so frustrating to see that this letter writer is kind of dismissing that kind of it's a very beautiful and kind of a sacred thing for them to have non-binary trans friends to come out in this climate, or you know, even the last 5 years when the dominant trans conversation has been incredibly binary, that they're more upset about their ideas or views on grammar than in honoring this person's identity and journey.
Right.
Their priorities are completely messed up.
I think part of what's fascinating too is exactly what you were saying is this idea that the letter writer positions themselves as a person who wishes to be an ally, but is prevented by doing so, not out of any sort of inherent transphobia, but because they are so profoundly committed to precise language, even though they acknowledge that our language is imperfect, that they are prevented from supporting people who are merely asking for the wrong pronoun. And if they would ask for a different pronoun, if they would invent a new pronoun, then the letter writer would be thrilled to oblige and be going to like a lot of genderqueer brunches.
and
it's kind of amazing. This is hypothetical, right? There's this sentence that's like, there's probably a lot of trans people I'm just not going to be able to hang out with now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one in their life who's doing this right now, but they're already imagining and making that choice. Obviously, I would choose never saying the singular they over spending time with this person. It would be impossible for us to communicate. It would be impossible for me to demonstrate respect to them. We would not be able to connect, which is a pretty big estrangement.
And this, you know, this really speaks to their cis privilege. And I really want to find out what their feelings are about cis. but it really speaks to the cis privilege that they're saying, I'm only going to allow you to speak your truth and be your whole selves in the parameters that I'm defining for you. If you use the language that I'm comfortable with, that I'm most comfortable with, if you use the when I want to, how I want to set those boundaries and have that, and if for them to have a non-binary trans person have to kind of go through, you know, do the right dance for them to be heard, really speaks to their privilege. And they need to be able to, as an ally, or as a supposed ally, sit back in their, you know, discomfort, allow people of any minority group, but in this case, non-binary trans people, to really lead the way. And if you may not get it right away, I know I didn't get it right away, and I still don't get it all the way, but to sit in your discomfort and, you know, listen and learn to that experience, and ask questions and try to push yourself, I think is the best thing this letter writer can do, instead of, you know, drawing this line in the sand and deciding from the get-go that their precious, messy English language is more important than the lives and experiences of our non-binary siblings.
Yeah. And I would just to kind of close on this, like, just for what is my advice to this letter writer? I am not going to create a new pronoun and tell other people to use it about themselves. And I think it's kind of fascinating that there appears to be this sense on the letter writer's part. I imagine they perceive me as cis, and that may be a part of what's going on here, but they perceive me as some sort of person with a platform and some sort of linguistic authority who would somehow be a better judge of what other people should want to be called than they themselves would be. I'm not the best judge of what another person wants to be called. They are. And I would encourage this letter writer, who it seems like perhaps on some level would like to know more, would like to think about this differently if they could see their way to doing so. Do a little research. I promise you, trans people, gender fluid, gender queer people have done a lot more thinking about language and pronouns than the majority of cis people. So if you were even to simply Google something like the history of gender neutral pronouns, or take a look at like Julia Serrano's Whipping Girl, read something by a trans or a non-binary person, and find out the history of alternative pronouns. Do a little research on the history of the singular they. NPR did a piece about it, I think, last year. I think the American Dialect Society nominated the singular they as the word of the year of 2015.
They did.
Learn about the history. Learn about the ways in which it's used. I believe in that article they were talking about, you know, Mary Norris wrote this big sort of grammar book about being the New Yorker copy editor, where she said that the use of the singular they is just wrong. And then the NPR article points out that a few pages earlier she had written, nobody wanted to think they were not essential, which is kind of lovely. Just this sense of, even when we're trying very hard not to use a singular they, we clearly have a history of using it. Check out the history. You will find a lot of really interesting thoughts. It sounds like because this is hypothetical, there are perhaps not a lot of, out trans and non-binary people in this letter writer's life. And I encourage you to do a little more reading, find out a little more about how other people have thought about pronouns and ways in which we can refer to ourselves and ways in which we wish others to refer to us. I'm not going to produce a new pronoun for you that other people should be asked to use. That's pretty much not how language works, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, on a totally different note, this next one is really something. The subject line is, my girlfriend is jealous of my masseuse. So I'm just going to go ahead and dive in. Dear Prudence, I have serious back issues and bad insurance coverage right now. I work in a warehouse and I do a lot of manual labor. A friend of mine was formerly trained as a masseuse, but works in a different field now. Recently, she offered to work on my back, and after one session, I wasn't in any pain. My girlfriend freaked out and wants me to stop. She acknowledged that there is nothing but friendship between me and this friend, that I love my girlfriend and would never cheat on her. Quote unquote, all the rubbing makes her uncomfortable. My friend offered to teach my girlfriend how to massage me, and she declined. My friend offered to do the sessions with my girlfriend in the room, and my girlfriend lasted only halfway through before walking out and crying. My friend left, and I had to comfort my girlfriend. My friend feels insulted, and I feel overwhelmed. My girlfriend is putting her needless anxiety over my physical well-being. I can't afford $100 a week on massages, not unless I give up eating. We keep talking around each other in circles. Is there any way I can reassure my girlfriend? My friend told me that she was willing to keep doing sessions if I dealt with my girlfriend, but didn't like being, quote-unquote, all but called a whore, and will only come over now if there is a group of friends present. I am completely stuck. Can you help me?
I want to befriend, like, masseuses who are willing to massage me for free. I have stress to deal with. Like, where are these people in
this
my life?
This is an incredibly generous friend.
We're seeing a lot of, for them to say, what, once a week, a massage for free?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of money, and that's a lot of, yeah, that's good stuff. This is the poor, I mean, I feel for the girlfriend just because I understand being in places of insecurity in relationships. And I know that at times we can, in the moment and in that space, we may be oblivious to how insecure we are and in our relationship. And so hearing anything contrary to what you believe can be also, rejected. But I also understand what it's like to have a lot of packages. I was a gymnast most of my life, and I did a lot of massages, and they were extremely helpful for me in being able to train and be able to continue to work on my body.
I did not know you were a gymnast.
I was a gymnast.
I should have had more like physical therapy themed questions.
I was a gymnast for from second grade all the way to college. I did aqua gymnastics.
Oh,
I did NBA halftime shows and all this crazy stuff. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Wait, okay, drop all the questions. We're only talking about your gymnastics career until the end of the show.
I have to send you a picture. I had, I used to be able to like do my splits and like hold a handstand for like 2 minutes.
You have to send me a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
I can't even touch my toes.
No, I can touch my toes, but like it's so weird that 2 years, I finished my gymnastics and undergrad about 2.5 years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago, and now it's like I went from having a splits and being super flexible and all this stuff to just not. It quickly leaves you. But I can appreciate getting free massages. Like, that's so great. My team had a masseuse on staff, luckily, but having not a masseuse on staff for me anymore, they're expensive. It depends on the city. You know, they can go up to 120, 140 with tips. And that's like not even like a super, super nice massage. It's just a regular massage. So, I mean,
I just want you to know right now I'm actually Googling Kelly Crew gymnastics.
Wait.
Like, I'm pretending to listen, but I'm 100% just looking at pictures of you.
Yeah, well, this is great. I used to walk around on my hands when I was like in second grade in the grocery store. My mom would have to like hit my feet down, and she'd be like, "Stop it, we're in public." I was a little a monkey acrobat, which was
okay. So far, I'm not seeing any pictures of you doing gymnastics. Okay. Just a lot of pictures of you like wearing a leather jacket and staring off into the middle distance, which are, don't get me wrong, amazing.
Okay.
But I want the gymnastics pictures.
I'll send you some of the gymnastics pictures so you can see it. It's kind of a completely different life now for me. It's weird to see even just a few years ago.
I cannot wait. I can certainly appreciate the girlfriend's position if there was a different angle on the story, right? If this was just like this guy you were dating who had a weirdly close friend, and all of a sudden she'd started giving him massages and he could kind of afford to get a professional one, or there wasn't a really pressing health issue. Sure, I can understand feeling like this is weird and makes me uncomfortable. But it seems like, and I mean, all we have is the letter writer's word, but like, he's not saying like, this is someone I used to date or someone I flirt with, or I think she has feelings for me and she's trying to massage me to get somewhere. It sounds like he's in genuine physical pain a lot of the time. Does not have enough money or insurance coverage to go see a professional, and has a really kind friend who's willing to help him out and has kind of bent over backwards to make sure the girlfriend can see this is not sexual, this is not flirtatious,
this is work.
I'm helping a friend. I cannot imagine being any of the three people in that room of like the sad jealousy massage. That sounds like a nightmare for everyone involved.
It does. I wouldn't have even agreed to it. That sounds really... Yeah, I don't know what she was going to do for an hour inside the room, because she can't be like on her phone, like ruining the ambiance or something.
I wouldn't even want to watch someone I was dating get a massage like for fun, much less like for insecurity and jealousy reasons. Yeah. Like, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to get on my phone now. This is boring.
And I think that, I mean, I think it does speak a lot about the girlfriend that she wasn't even willing, she wasn't willing to be taught, which
is fine. Like, I'm not a masseuse, but like the bit about like, quote unquote, all the rubbing makes her uncomfortable. Well, that's what a massage is. So like literally the concept of a massage is what bothers you.
I wonder if she's given any suggestions on what he can do. Because I feel like the boyfriend saying, okay, so you want to sit in the room with me? Can she teach you? You know, like there's different things he's thrown out there. I wonder what she's done.
Right. She's not throwing out any alternatives.
Yeah. Was she willing to pay for some of his massages if she goes to a different place? You know, what are things that he that she could be doing to kind of try to meet him halfway? Right. You know, back pain and physical pain can be super, you know, paralyzing and really mess up with your quality of life. Mess up your sleep, give you migraines. Like, there's a lot of stuff that can come from it. If you're doing manual labor. He also needs to learn how to lift correctly. Sorry, I just thought about that as a gymnast. if he's hurting his back too much, that much. He should learn how to lift things correctly.
I always wonder with stuff like this, like if he's working in something like an Amazon warehouse where there's often like an incredibly intense like top down pressure of like you need to
go quickly
and move so much inventory, no matter how correctly you're lifting. If you're like working way harder and faster than you need to, because otherwise you'll lose your job, like you're going to get injured no matter what. And that's a tough position to be in.
But if some
of this is coming from incorrect, you know, maybe especially with the bad insurance, I'm like, I don't think this is like a person with a union job where there's like a lot of protections for laborers, unfortunately.
But, you know, not that the boyfriend hasn't done enough already as is, but perhaps, you know, learning how to do some stretches and how to lift things in ways that won't extend his back or his lower back. Would be kind of be helpful, because I think you actually, well, I know you actually get done things done quicker and are able to lift more if you're doing it correctly.
Right.
Sorry, that's my old self coming out.
Even if it weren't, even if your girlfriend wasn't the issue, just because, you know, this is not going to be like a solution you'll be able to avail yourself of for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that your friend's always going to be available to massage you. So it's definitely great to develop alternate techniques that you can do yourself to help yourself out. So whether that's like getting one of those back massagers as well, or foam rollers, or like learning some new stretches, that's great.
And sometimes it doesn't work out. I remember I would have some accidents sometimes. And you know, a girl would fall on my head or things, and I would have I would get sprains or fractures. I went to a chiropractor, and they took an X-ray from the first time seeing me, and they were like, "Were you recently in a car accident?"
Oh my god!
And I was like, "No, I'm just a gymnast." So sometimes it's just kind of the you know what you have to do, I guess. Where were you?
I cannot tell you how upset I am that we didn't get you into the studio. Like, we should have flown you out here so you could be doing splits right now.
That's fantastic.
Idiot.
But
yeah, okay, so like, bottom line, I think the letter writer should keep getting the massages. And I think that he should not be getting them at his house where his girlfriend's going to be. They should be in some other location. And I think he should be really upfront with his girlfriend, which is like, you've acknowledged that there's nothing going on between me and this other person, that I love you, and that I'm not cheating on you. This is necessary for me to get my job done and my physical well-being. If I had a financial alternative, I would avail myself of it. And I'm also going to do as much as I can on my own, like with regards to stretching and lifting techniques and whatnot, to make sure that I am not like completely dependent upon this. But this is necessary for me. I would love you to accept that. I don't want you to come watch and cry. I don't want you to like pick at me every time I do it. Like, this is necessary for me to be physically okay, and I need you to be okay with that. And if you're not, you know, we're not going to continue to like argue over it. I'm not going to continue to have that conversation.
I wonder if he were to swap genders with the masseuse. I wonder if his friend that's a woman was able to taught one of his guy friends. Or him and his guy friend who works together to massage each other. I know that's.
What if he's bisexual, Eliel?
You didn't let me finish.
Because I didn't get to see you do the splits today, so I'm angry and I'm lashing out.
So, you know, that might be a set of issues itself. But maybe if he is a straight guy and, you know, maybe a girlfriend would feel more comfortable getting, you know, having a man massage him. I'm just trying to help this guy out and get his massage, honestly.
Sure. That just seems like a lot of accommodating for a situation that the girlfriend's already acknowledged. She's like, it's clear to me that you're not trying to flirt with her. I know that. Like, this is a feeling she has to process on
Absolutely.
Her own, not a condition that you need to change. Like, if this were a situation where you were flirting with this other person or had a history with them, I would totally get that. And I would definitely recommend that you look elsewhere. But even your girlfriend has acknowledged that her response is unwarranted. And as such, and like, where are you going to find like another friend who's willing to do this? Do you know what I mean? Like, not everybody is going to be like, yeah, I can take an hour out of my week every week to give my friend a free massage. You should keep doing it. I think you should do it kindly. Don't be like, you dumb jerk, stop having feelings, but just be like, it's okay for you to like feel insecure and I can talk about that with you. But you know, you don't ask me to stop doing it, and don't like revisit the subject endlessly. Like, if you need to go take a walk during those times, do it. Go do something for yourself. Or if you have another solution that you would like to offer me, I'd be happy to hear it.
Maybe they could talk through some things, because clearly she's not secure. Maybe there's an underlying problem. They need to have
for some
conversations about their relationship that have nothing to do with the massage, to make her feel comfortable in what they are and what they're doing.
Yeah. Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think you also really need to respect your friend's boundaries, because she said she was willing to keep doing the sessions if you deal with your girlfriend. If you feel like it's getting to a point where your girlfriend is going to like call this woman up or yell at her or go find her, you know, you owe your friend better than that. And if that is what's happening, then you need to tell her and be honest so that she can make a decision about whether or not this is worth it for her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did it. We fixed everyone's problems.
It's true.
Everyone is so much better off. Before you get out of here, do you have any last piece of advice to just our general readership, like lift things carefully or, you know, don't date people in college anything else that you just think the people should know?
I didn't prepare for this. See, I was trying to.
I just sprung it on you.
I know. I was trying to pretend to have my life together enough to give some little good morsels and sound bites this last hour.
Would you like to give us some bad advice from your messy life?
From my messy life. Hold all the grudges. Here's a piece of advice. And something that I've been doing a lot, recently is that, making sure that, I put time and energy in relationship that is being reciprocated. I think a lot of people, want to be, whether it be, a platonic or romantic, want more than that other person, and you can only do so much. And I think at some point, it's no longer a relationship, but it's you giving your time and energy and emotions and not getting anything back, and that becomes toxic.
Could you please go back in time and give me this advice X amount of time ago?
And no, it's just something that it's this last, I think, year and a half I've been really focusing on and being super busy and work and things like that. I want to be intentional in my relationships, whether they be with friends or romantic. And if I'm putting this energy into our growing together, and you're not, I am not respected enough to be to continue this. And so for myself, for my, to honor who I am and to love myself enough to say, to let you go, has been a thing that I've been working on.
All right. Hold on to grudges and let people go. That's this week's closing thought. Eliel, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so glad that we've gotten everyone who lives in your apartment.
It was, yeah. Yeah, you have. Now we need to get. I'm going to steal a cat and put it and bring it into our apartment so that they can come on the show. Oh my goodness! I just did so much right there. This is fantastic.
I want you to get like a Chrissy from Three's Company style third roommate.
Okay, it's going to be hard. Me and John Paul are like a married old couple and. No, but we like laugh so much and we'll like tweet things to each other in the other rooms and be giggling and hearing each other. It's a mess. So we need someone to mesh well with us, or else it's just going to be us. I think we're going to live together until I marry him off for a couple of cows or something. That's what's going to, yeah.
I'm here for it, and I will be there on that day.
I love it.
Thank you again so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
That's it from all of us here at the Dear Prudence Show. And by all of us here, I mean myself and Audrey, who is a plate of glass away from me. That's pretty much everyone who's holding down the fort. At any rate, we're going to gently release all of you back into the week and wish you a great couple of days until you come back and find your way home. Thanks. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. It helps more people find the show, and more problems find solutions. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.